Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death. This episode is on our playlist, Dining with the Disappeared, where we talk about people who have vanished. We discuss the circumstances surrounding their disappearance, and we talk about the place where they were last seen. I'm Stacey Lee. Let's begin. This is a very strange case. It has some similarities to other disappearances we've covered, where people go out, maybe they're drinking, maybe they have some mental health issues, and then they disappear. But this case is a little different because there are vanishings, and then there are vanishings, as in poof, now you see him, now you don't. Brian Schaefer was born on February 25th, 1979. He grew up in Pickerington, Ohio, which is a suburb of Columbus. He graduated high school in 1997 and then got his undergraduate degree in microbiology. He then began medical school at OSU in 2004, and during his second year, his mother died. Brian's friends say that even though on the outside he appeared to be handling his mother's death really well, there were times that they saw him struggle, and he struggled really pretty severely at times. Brian had a girlfriend named Alexis Wagner. They were pretty serious, and everyone who knew the couple believed Brian was getting ready to propose to her. They had a big trip to Miami planned for mid-April through spring break, and everyone that knew them kind of thought the proposal would happen there. Brian was really serious about his medical career, and he'd put a lot of time and money and effort into it, but he would often tell people that his real goal and his real dream was to be in kind of a beach-style band where they did Jimmy Buffett songs. So he obviously had two very distinct sides to his personality. Brian loved tropical locations and the whole beach lifestyle, and that was kind of the opposite of his life as a medical student. He was a fun-loving guy with a nice group of friends and a bright future ahead of him. On March 31st, 2006, classes at OSU ended for the week of spring break. Brian and his dad, Randy, went out for a steak dinner, and Brian's dad noticed that Brian seemed exhausted from cramming for end-of-term tests. Brian told his dad that he had plans to go out with his friend Clint later on in the evening. And Brian's dad kind of quietly thought to himself, that doesn't sound like a good idea. You look exhausted. But he didn't say anything because he thought, you know, maybe he just needs to go and blow off some steam. Brian was in his late 20s at this point, and, you know, his dad's not going to tell him what to do. At 9 o'clock that evening, Brian met his friend Clint Florence at the Ugly Tuna Saluna, which is a bar on High Street in Columbus. At around 10 o'clock, Brian called his girlfriend, Alexis, who had returned to her home in Toledo to visit with her family before she and Brian left for this big Miami vacation. Brian and Clint went bar hopping for a few hours, kind of working their way down to the Arena District. At each bar they stopped at, they took one shot each, so they were drinking, but not more than a couple an hour. At a little after midnight, Brian and Clint met up with Meredith Reed, who was one of Clint's friends. She gave the guys a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna where they had started their night, and the three friends had one last drink together. So Brian, Meredith, and Clint are sitting at the bar, and you can see this is a small place. This is a tight bar. 1 minute, Brian is right there drinking with them, and the next minute he's gone. Neither Clint or Meredith saw him get up, saw him walk away, saw him leave, and they never saw him again. They said Brian was just there, and then he was just not. You know how bars are. They're loud and noisy and chaotic, so it's not that unusual to miss someone getting up and leaving your table. Clint and Meredith start looking around for Brian. They begin calling his phone because they want to leave, but he never picked up. They searched the whole bar. They walked around the whole floor. They went into the restrooms. They just kind of kept wandering in circles, thinking they'd find him maybe sitting at a table or talking with people somewhere around the bar. At around 2 a.m., the bar closed and everyone had to leave. So Clint and Meredith do what I would do and what I'm sure most of you would do. They stand outside the front door as the bar empties out and they wait for Brian. This bar had an escalator that went from the entrance up into the bar, and it was the only way to get into the bar. Clint and Meredith stood and waited, but the last people came out of the bar and no Brian. So of course they just figure he left. He just left. Maybe he didn't feel well. He got up and left. He didn't say anything and he went home. Saturday morning, both Alexis and Brian's father called Brian's phone, but he never picked up. They each tried to call him again on Sunday, and again, no answer, no reply. At this point, they thought maybe he's just packing, maybe he's sleeping. Brian's dad knew he was really tired, so maybe he just turned his phone off and he didn't want to be bothered. On Monday morning, however, Brian did not show up at the airport, and he missed his flight to Miami. Then the people in Brian's life knew something was really wrong. He was reported missing to the Columbus Police Department. Police began their search at the Ugly Tuna Saloon where Brian was last seen. They were happy to find that the bar had working security cameras. Police reviewed the footage, and it clearly showed Brian, Clint, and Meredith going up the escalator to the bar's main entrance at 1:15 a.m. Brian is then seen on camera around 1:55 a.m. talking with two women and then saying goodbye. He then moves off camera, going in the direction of the bar escalator to re-enter the bar. The police watched the security footage of everyone coming back out of the bar, and Brian Schaefer is not on that footage. This isn't a bar with a bunch of entrances. You have to go up the escalator to get into the bar. There is one back entrance, but at the time of Brian's disappearance, there was a ton of construction going on out there, and it was almost impossible to even get out that back door. The employees said they were barely using it at that point. Police searched the surrounding area of the bar and found absolutely no evidence of Brian. Where could he have gone? He had seemingly vanished into thin air. Investigators began to explore the possibility that Brian chose to disappear, and to be honest, I think that is a very likely possibility in this particular case. We've seen cases like this before, right? Someone is in a really high demand situation. They're under a lot of pressure. Maybe it's a high demand job. It's a very stressful school situation. Then on top of that, everyone was expecting this proposal to happen in Miami. Maybe Brian didn't want to propose. Maybe Brian didn't feel like getting married at that point. And he didn't want to disappoint everybody. I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying we have seen things like this happen in the past. I have a daughter in medical school right now, my son's wife, and it's a lot. It is a lot. I can understand how some people just might be like, hey, this isn't for me. I'm done. But might be worried about what everyone would think about them. Then you take into account that everyone was kind of expecting this proposal to happen. And if he wasn't 100% sure that that's what he wanted to do, I'm sure his girlfriend was not going to be real happy about that. Maybe it was just all too much for Brian. We put a lot of pressure on men and we don't allow them to talk about their feelings. I personally think it's something we really need to work on. We have got to allow men to talk about their feelings, their stresses, what they're upset about without this stigma that that somehow makes them weak. Maybe Brian was feeling boxed in and just kind of snapped. Now, there is also a great possibility that someone hurt or killed Brian. Police took surveillance footage from all of the surrounding area bars and restaurants, and Brian wasn't seen on any of those cameras. Like I said in the beginning, this is a very strange one. He was there 1 second and gone the next. Now, some of the footage from the surveillance cameras wasn't great. So if Brian had chosen to disappear and he had gone into the restroom and changed his clothes, he wouldn't be very recognizable on the footage as they were mainly picking him out by what he was wearing. The problem with that theory is that Clint and Meredith say Brian didn't have a bag with him. He wasn't packing around an extra outfit. So, you know, if he did change his clothes, where would those clothes have come from? Brian also had a noticeable tattoo on his upper right arm of the stick figure logo from the artwork for the Pearl Jam song Alive. They didn't see anyone with that tattoo leaving the bar. Police even searched the sewer systems around the area to see if there was evidence that someone had been down there. There was absolutely nothing. A psychic came forward and told Randy Schaefer that Brian's body was near a bridge. So Randy and a couple of people bought waders and started spending all of their free time along the shores of the Olentangy River. They searched everywhere they could possibly think of for Brian. Months went by and then years. At a Pearl Jam concert later in 2006, lead singer Eddie Vedder took time between songs to ask that if anyone in the crowd had information on Brian's disappearance, that they please come forward. No one did. In September of 2008, Randy Schaefer was working out in his yard cleaning debris during a big windstorm. He was struck with a large branch that broke off a tree and it killed him. Randy's neighbors found him on the next day. How sad. This is just a family that had a lot of tragedy. When Randy's obituary ran, you know how you can go on those online books and sign your name or leave a message of condolence? Somebody went on the memorial website on the obituary and signed the digital book that said, "To Dad, Love Brian." And then it was signed like U.S. Virgin Islands or something like that. The police traced where that message had come from, and it had come from like the library down the street. So what a crappy thing to do. Like, who does that? Who sits around and torments people that are already going through tragedy? I think that's horrible. People have criticized Clint because they feel like he hasn't talked enough about what happened that night. Some people feel like he's been too withdrawn. But in 2009, an article was published containing leaked information from the police department that says the police as a whole believe Brian chose to vanish. Randy never stopped searching for his son, and he even got involved in state legislation that establishes protocol for disappearances like these. The bill Randy was trying to get passed has since become law. As of now, Brian Schaefer has been missing for 15 years. No trace of him has ever been found. This is an age-progressed photo of Brian Schaefer. This is what they think he would look like if he's still alive. If he is still out there somewhere, he would be 42 years old. If you have information on the disappearance of Brian Schaefer, please call 614-461-8477 or visit stopcrime.org to submit a tip online. You can remain anonymous. Now, as we always do here on this channel, we talk a little bit about the location of the disappearance. The last place Brian was seen was the Ugly Tuna Saluna, which, from what I can gather, has closed. However, there is a second location that has opened called the Ugly Tuna 2. I have to believe this is the same place. Who would pick that name twice? The old Ugly Tuna Saluna has some pretty bad reviews on Yelp. It's a typical college bar, kind of dirty, pretty dark and cluttered with a bunch of random things on the walls. It has cheap drinks and bar food like sandwiches and fried shrimp. I think there were a couple of pasta dishes on the menu. Like most of these bars, they have these fishbowl drinks where a bunch of cheap alcohol is poured into an actual fishbowl and then they throw in about 5 straws and everyone drinks from the same bowl. Not really appealing to me, but I'm sure it's fun with a group of friends. Come on, let's be honest. The Ugly Tuna 2 seems to be pretty popular. There's a small patio in front, and inside it's a pretty typical college bar. It looks like a fun place to hang out and meet friends and get something to eat and drink. Unfortunately, it is also the place forever tied to one of the most baffling disappearances in recent years, the place where Brian Schaefer vanished into thin air. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, Dining with the Disappeared. Please like and subscribe if you like this channel. It really helps us out. Stay safe and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? And sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.